This is the Jason Jones Show, powered by Mudhouse Media. Now, here's Jason Jones.
Aloha, everybody, and welcome to the Jason Jones Show. I am your host, Jason Jones, broadcasting from the rainy hill country of Texas. And today we're going to have as our, first of all, before we get to the guest, earlier today I got the most beautiful donation to the Vulnerable People Project I have ever received. And I was looking through our program that sort of manages our donations, and I saw a $2 recurring monthly donor come in. And I sent the donor a note. I just said, thank you so much for your donation. And he immediately responded. And no, I said, thank you for standing with us. That's what I said. Thank you for standing with us. And then he immediately responded, no, I live in Syria in a town that is under siege from Turkey. Our water's been shut off and snipers have recently shot even children. Thank you for standing with us. And to think that a gentleman that is living in a besieged city with no water made a commitment to $2, a recurring donation of $2 a month to the Vulnerable People Project, meant the world to me. And I was actually on a conference call multitasking when I was responding to him, and I had to put it on mute because when he said, no, thank you for standing for us, I live in Syria, I just began to cry. And so I just want to ask everyone listening, if, you know, go to thegreatcampaign.org. And if you could match that gift with a $2 recurring monthly donation, that would, you know, these recurring donations, $2, $5, $10, $100. We recently received a $1,000 a month donation. When, before we started this podcast, maybe 5% of our support for the Vulnerable People Project came from recurring donations. Now, half our budget comes through recurring donations. So at this rate in a year, it'll really allow us to plan because, you know, I have to hustle. We're a small organization, and I really have to hustle to fundraise, and always making budgets is more wishful thinking than you know, something I can guarantee. And so these recurring donations to the Vulnerable People Project are what really allow us to make budgets and long-term sustaining plans. So, and if you give that $2 a month donation at thegreatcampaign.org, you will be on our list too. So you'll get to know a lot about what we're doing if you're not already on our list. So go to thegreatcampaign.org. And I guess that's, they sponsor us, right? The Vulnerable People Project, the Movie to Movement sponsor this show. So when you go there, you're also helping to support the show. But the truth is, I started this show to serve the mission of the Vulnerable People Project. And so I just wanted to share with that because that was just so beautiful to me, that $2 a month recurring donation. But our guest today is going to be the great Stephen Harriott from Catholic Vote. Stephen had what was my favorite podcast. It was a video podcast, and it was very professional. And I guess he lacks constancy and fortitude. I'll have to ask him. I'm so grateful, actually, he stopped. It was my favorite podcast, but, you know, I think it was probably much better than the Jason Jones Show. It was just something spectacular. And for whatever reason, he stopped doing it. Thanks be to God. Hopefully, a lot of you who listen to him now are over here. And but maybe we can encourage him to do it again, right? A rising tide lifts all boats. Well, Stephen's going to be on the show talking to us about Biden's first 100 days. Catholic Vote did a detailed breakdown of Biden's first 100 days on issues that are going to be important, I believe, to all of us. So Stephen is our guest. This episode is being brought to you, of course, by the Vulnerable People Project and Movie to Movement, but also, you know, by Mike Lindell's great My Pillow. And I have these slippers. I'm showing off. You know, I had the pillow. I had the mattress topper. I had the Giza sheets. I have all of that. But you can't kind of show off, you know, the Giza Dream sheets to the neighbors. But what you can do is you can go to the mailbox in your My Slippers. Mike Lindell's My Slippers. These are the most comfortable slippers. You can wear them inside. You can wear them outside. You can wear them all day long. I have plantar fasciitis. Why? Because I'm a big guy that does a sport that's meant for young, small guys. Muay Thai kickboxing, I got to get in the commercial, is, you know, meant for Thai guys that are 24 and weigh 130 pounds. I'm 49 and I weigh 230 pounds and my feet always hurt. But thanks to Mike Lindell's My Slippers, my feet feel wonderful. I can show off when I go to get my Epoch Times, bring it into the house or go check my mail or get the local paper. And then my neighbors look and go, oh my gosh, he has My Slippers. And then I tell them, you want these slippers? You have to go to MyPillow.com, click on the radio listener square, use the code Jones, and you get that 40% discount. You don't have to be my neighbor to get the 40% discount. You just have to put in the code. So go to MyPillow.com, use the code Jones when you click through the radio listener square. Now with the great Stephen Harriet on the Jason Jones Show. Stephen Harriet of Catholic Vote, welcome to the Jason Jones Show.
Thank you very much for having me.
So I love this CatholicVote.org/Biden, a timeline for Catholics, but it's really not just for Catholics. It's for anyone who really cares about the most important issues related to human rights, human dignity, peace, prosperity, freedom, religious freedom, economic freedom. It's really great. And so I wanted to have you on, we can look back at Biden's first 100 days. But before we do that, I have to confess in the introduction, I said you had my favorite podcast and I was really grateful that you lacked the fortitude and constancy to continue on with it so that I could, you know, not have you as competition for this show.
Yeah, well, you know what? It's anything for a friend.
No, why did you stop your show?
I need to rest, you know, between those real pushes for greatness. And you know, when I start up again, I'll blow you out of the water.
I'll be ready for you.
Pause.
Yeah, I'm going to monitor your show and then I'm going to tweet out at you and hashtag the woke mob, and we're going to cancel. That's what I'm going to do. As soon as you start back up, I'm going to mobilize the woke mob to cancel you. It won't take long.
Well, it's not hard to do. I mean, basically, yeah, Media Matters. Actually, I have the number of a guy at Media Matters.
Okay, you give that to me.
What is it? I didn't watch.
All right.
So you better, you know, be careful who you're watching, who you're messing with.
No, so I know why you stopped. You stopped because you have a lot of really important work and you're producing a lot of great content over there at Catholic Vote. But I do hope you bring your show back. So now let's look back. We've, you know, everyone now, it's Saturday morning. Now people are listening to the show. They've heard everyone else talk about Biden's last 100 days. A lot of it was just gaslighting from the left and the mainstream media. So give us an update. So what has Biden accomplished? I know he made these vaccines for everyone. That was amazing how he did that.
Yeah, out of thin air. It was pretty amazing. And it's something, the greatest thing is that it was so kind of him and generous and magnanimous of him to come up with these vaccines, because it's not even anything anyone asked for. No one even wants it. So, I mean, it's amazing for him to be so thoughtful. It's sort of like, you know, doing some sort of great gesture for your girlfriend, even when she's not expecting it and there's no, like, anniversary date.
Yeah, but he's not even had nothing to do with the vaccines up to this point. Now, I'm not taking the vaccine. Let's just be very clear. I'm glad I know a lot of these people want their vaccines. Let them have the vaccine. I'm all for everyone being vaccinated but me. I am not going to be vaccinated because of structural racism and the patriarchy and ageism, although I'm kind of old, so maybe. But I'm almost 50, so I don't know if that works. But what I'm saying is,
you're 39 years old. You're Jack Benny, or 39.
I'm 39. No, but I'm not going to get the vaccine until every elderly person, woman, and person of color gets the vaccine, because I'm woke. And on every young white man or middle-aged white man that took this vaccine, that hopped the line. I am not hopping the line, Stephen Harriet. I am not. But let's get to what he really did. I'm going to tell you what I, you know, He's radical on abortion. He's radical on transgender ideology, like even running ahead of the trans, quote unquote, trans community, running ahead of the quote unquote LGBT community, abandoning his Catholic faith. He insulted everyone who's Chinese by calling the genocide of the Uyghur a Chinese cultural norm. And yeah, ISIS is on the rise. So walk us through the past 100 days.
Okay, well, first of all, because you started out with a reference to vaccines, that is on our list. Nothing gets past us, the Catholic vote.
Okay,
so
let's
February
go. February 16th. Let's start with vaccines.
We have
February 16th. This,
the whole thing is a great tool. Again, it's catholicvote.org/Biden. It's a timeline. It's the first 100 days of Biden's presidency and all that he did relevant to the issues that matter most to American Catholics. But it's not only the first 100 days. We're going to keep this thing updated every week for the entire presidency. So you will not miss a thing if you go to catholicvote.org/Biden. You can keep...
Hey, you're not a paid sponsor. We have given... I gave you a lot of love up the front. You keep dropping the website like that, you're going to get an invoice. Mike Lindell is going to say, I don't get my MyPillow.com special code Jones for the slippers said as much as Steven said CatholicVote.org/Biden. But it is a great tool. So what happened on February 16th with vaccines?
Well, that's just the relevant thing you just brought up. False claim, says the headline. Biden takes credit for Trump admin vaccine. So right away, what you've got, and this is the whole format of the entire thing, it's a line vertically from the top to the bottom from the present date back to January 20th. And you see these headlines like false claim, Biden takes credit for Trump admin vaccine. You got a quotation from Biden right there. There's a little blurb that gives you a hint of it. And you can click read more. It'll take you to the actual news source, which in this case is the Daily Wire did a write-up on it. And it's just dates, headlines, blurb, and a link to where you can read more. And it's just the whole thing from January 20th all the way up. One of the first things you find in this timeline is the headline, January 20th, very first day, Biden nominates scandal-plagued trans doctor, Rachel Levine, who's right, you know, presently this guy, forgive me, but it's the guy, Rachel Levine, is embroiled in a terrible scandal that involved the deaths of thousands of seniors in Pennsylvania, where Levine served as the Secretary of Health. And right in the middle of that scandal, Biden nominates him to be the National Assistant Secretary of Health. So
and Levine, right? Am I? You probably didn't talk about this because you're a gentleman, but Levine was, we now know during COVID, during the shutdown, was going to sex parties.
I did not know that.
Yeah, well, yep. That has broken. This is not fake news.
The thing about Catholic Vote is we're a PG website.
No, I get it. So this is a PG show. I shouldn't have said that, but it's just, you know, lecturing us on being safe.
Yeah, well, and the other thing is, of course, also he pulled out a family member. If I remember correctly, he was very conscientious about his own mother. No blame there. He wanted to be conscientious about his own mother. But essentially, the Pennsylvania scandal involving COVID health policy resembles the New York one for your listeners, which they're surely familiar with, because it involves moving seniors away in such a way as to spread the disease amongst those who are most vulnerable. And that's what Levine was under fire for. And now, guess what? Secretary of Health for the entire nation. And that was one of
this goes to the Catholic principle of subsidiarity. Let the proper social level handle it. You know, what happens to your parents or children that are in group care homes, like what was happening in New York? We did a whole show on it. You know, Cuomo sent COVID positive patients to group homes where young people with autism were living and the parents couldn't even go see the child. This obliteration, you know, having distant unelected bureaucracies, having states and the federal government follow the mandates of distant unelected bureaucracies, trampling on the rights of the family, of the individual, of the church, of neighborhoods and cities and towns. This was the great catastrophe of COVID. And as we've seen in Pennsylvania, we've seen in New York. Let's go with your most recent one. You have here now that Biden says that we disagree with the bishops on using aborted children for research.
That's right. Just a few days ago, April 28th, we wrote that up. That's disgusting. And it's a great example of why this timeline is such a great tool. Because there are so many people who are sort of sleepy. I know one anecdote of a nun, very holy woman, but she doesn't pay much attention to current events. And she does watch mainstream media when she's walking through airports. And so somebody said, what do you think of Joe Biden? She said, he's a very nice man. And as I understand it, he carries a rosary and goes to mass. That's all she knew, right? So this is a super important tool. This is Biden telling the bishops, the Catholic bishops of the U.S., this is the White House saying, we disagree with the bishops who are desperately pleading with the White House to stop its decision to allow federally employed scientists to experiment on aborted children. They're using the flesh of unborn children for a science experiment. This is as ugly as you can get. And just right there in the White House press room, you have the president's spokeswoman. We respectfully disagree with the bishops on that. We think science is important. We want to pursue this science. Well, of course, science to these people has become a nightmarish Frankenstein world where you're using unborn children, not just unborn children, by the way. This isn't just fetal tissue or whatever, fetal cells, which is a controversy in itself and a morally repugnant practice. This is aborted children. Sometimes, by the way, strategically aborted, carefully planned abortions go toward this kind of research. It's disgusting. It's absolutely disgusting. And a lot of people don't know this stuff is happening. And like you said, that's just our latest headline. This last 100 days has just been peppered with that kind of honestly scandalous stuff that the media is likely hiding from your suburban grandmother.
Well, there's a line. Catholic and there's a line. As I looked through this resource, which is amazing, there's a line of gesture, which is subhuman. It's a subhumanist regime. Biden is not a nice man. Like, you cannot call him. By the way, I don't like nice people. Like, if all you can say about someone is they're nice, I don't know what that means. You know, oh, they're nice. It means they don't have any obvious virtues, but they're not offensive. They're not repugnant. They don't have a lot of strong opinions. You know, yeah, they're nice. He's not a nice man. Come on. This guy is he's driven by avarice. So, and he's a subhumanist. He has no respect for human dignity, which is clear. Point by point by point. So, for example, on April 14th, the president of Guatemala blames Biden for seducing smugglers to bring children to the American border. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, actually, I was going to say that's a great example of where I might actually disagree with you about NICE. NICE is actually the prevailing vice of our time. And maybe Biden is nice, but being nice in today's context at this point in history is not what you should be. I just watched The Sound of Music. Captain Von Trapp, he's in trouble in Austria because he's not being nice when they say, the Anschluss has happened, cooperate, put this Nazi flag up on your own property and report to Berlin. He's the one, you know, why aren't you being nice, Von Trapp? Why are you making a fuss over this? Well, because he's virtuous, he's heroic, he refuses to be nice. So Biden, even if he is a nice man, it means that he is allowing the worst people, the cruelest people in the world, the most subhumanist people in the world to hold sway. He steps aside, he's a gentleman toward them. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, but he doesn't have any authentic love. He doesn't have courage, devoid of all virtues,
no.
Like all nice people, generally. You know, when someone's nice, I'm like, yeah. Oh, they are lacking in virtue. That's what nice has come to mean to me. Oh, somebody utterly lacking in virtue, but don't worry. It's not like they have any offensive vices either. You know, they're not going to rob you, but if you're being mugged, don't expect them to try to help you.
Well, yeah, and actually, the headline you brought up is perfect. Guatemala leader said Biden rhetoric led to the border crisis. Which is, by the way, a horrendous human rights crisis. It's unspeakable what's going on down there, especially to children and women. But here's a quotation from the president of Guatemala. He says, quote, he says of Biden's messaging and what he said, he says, they were compassionate messages that were understood by people in our country, especially the coyotes, to tell families, we'll take the children. The children can go in, and once the children are there, they will call their parents, and everything's going to be fine. But it's so interesting to me, like the president of Guatemala, he doesn't directly say Biden is a cruel man who is luring people to their deaths and to horrible rapes and child trafficking and so forth. It's compassionate messaging that's understood by the coyotes. It's used by the coyotes. You see what I'm saying? He's enabling cruelest people in the world.
Well, you know, you Catholic Vote has allowed me to publish on immigration. I think for almost a decade, I've been publishing articles on immigration with you guys. And I've just been trying to say the same thing over and over. Secure the border to protect vulnerable migrants from exploitation, to shut down the coyotes, the human traffickers, the drug dealers, the gun smugglers. The most compassionate thing in the world we can do is seal our southern border. Also to have a mandatory verification system to make sure everyone working in this country has the same architecture of legal protection. And, you know, my fear is that you read this article, this is like QAnon gold, right? Like, so QAnon are going to read this article, and I'm sure I can go look at QAnon sites, and they're running with this, but it is just an utter thoughtlessness to children. Biden, by the way, Biden knows, right? I mean, he knows that his virtue signaling may gain him political points, but does he knows that it's leading to children being raped, dying, and suffering, right? He knows that.
There's no way he does not. I mean, he's always known it, but now that he's the president, I mean, how many briefings has he sat through? Goodness sake. Not just as president, but under Barack Obama. He knows what's going on at the border, for sure. And in fact, some officials, and this is on our list as well, some officials under the current administration, they know too. And you know how you can tell? They're chasing people away from migrant facilities and trying to keep them from filming. Because it's scandalous. So, I mean, that's as clear as that. I mean, it's like
They chased away Senator Ted Cruz.
Correct.
They chased away Senator Ted Cruz. You know who else? No, I'm not going to ask you. I'm just going to state it because I don't want to get Catholic Vote in trouble. You know who else knows that a porous border leads to children being raped, children drowning? We know that a young boy just died last week, drowned in the river. You know who else knows this? The USCCB. They know it. Every spokesperson for the Bishops' Conference that advocates for a porous border, they know that it's leading to suffering. But it's about money and power, and they value money and power over the lives of the vulnerable. So that goes with your whole point about being nice. Like, I'm just tired of all these quote-unquote nice people that have their nice jobs with their nice 401k and their nice vacations and their nice breaks. And it's even prestigious. They can tell people, oh, I work for the USCCB in social justice. I help migrants. When exactly the opposite. You're advocating for policies that get children trafficked and killed. And the president of Guatemala agrees. What other points do you want to bring up?
Well, actually, just to add to what you just said, that's the thing is being nice. You referenced, actually, you and John Smirak just wrote a great piece about transhumanism. Which was great because you wrote a whole book about subhumanism. Transhumanism, you said, I think in your article, we should add another chapter to that book. Transhumanism is a form of subhumanism, deceptively. But you referenced Yeats, the poem, The Second Coming. And there, in that poem, the best lack all conviction, while the worst are full of passionate intensity. That's a really good description of what we're just talking about. So if you're the best, I think it's like, it makes me think of America in general, the character of America, or even Joe Biden, good, clean guy in a suit, kind of has a sort of Jimmy Stewart aesthetic going on, this sort of all-American, you know, he tries to wear the clothes anyway of a Jimmy Stewart, of the best kind of possible man, right, of modern America. And so in that way, he's kind of like the best, but he lacks all conviction. While the worst are full of passionate intensity. That's kind of a description of his administration, where he's just, all he is an empty suit who facilitates the worst.
I think, you know, I know too much about his dealings in Iraq and his brother's, James's dealings in Iraq. And I think they're roaring lions that have appetites, that they're thirst for, and a lust for power that can never be quenched. And they put a facade, you know, like Bill Gates with that goofy sweater vest. It's just to get you to put your guard down so they can rip your throat. I mean, I really believe that. They are heartless. A man that can look at the Uyghur genocide and say, it's a Chinese cultural norm. I mean, even the left, I saw a socialist, American Socialist magazine today, had an article cracking the left, a socialist magazine, cracking the mainstream left for being silent on the Uyghur. It's Jacobin, Jacobin.com. So I suspect with the name Jacobin, they're hard leftists. And they're saying, hey, the mainstream left, you can oppose the right while still acknowledging a genocide that cannot be denied. You have the president of the United States call it a Chinese cultural norm. 3 million people in concentration camps having their organs harvested, systematic rape, the transfer of their children away from families into re-education camps. And so this is a cruel, vicious, loveless man.
I think that's fair. And the other thing is, the thing is that, I guess what I'm getting at is that he has somehow successfully presented himself to many voters as a harmless, even as a boring person. His address to Congress the other night, very few people tuned in. The numbers were very, very anemic. And people on both left and right said, this man is boring. We just don't care what he has to say.
And, he was giving away money. He was giving away all the money in the world. How boring is that? The best, I said, someone sent me a message. It's like Oprah, you get a car. You know, you get the Giza Dream sheets. You get a vacation to Hawaii. But yet he made that boring. Socialism is boring. Socialism is boring, though, right? I guess it is. Totalitarianism, tyranny is boring.
Well, what it is it's loveless. It's transactional. Some of the earliest critics of communism and socialism, including John Paul II and many saints, their criticism sounds a lot like sort of idealistic criticisms of capitalism from the left, where they say it's all economic. It's all about cold, hard cash and possession, and it's loveless. It has no community. There's no family. And in fact, actually, that's another thing. We're going to be publishing just today at CatholicGlobe.org. We're going to be publishing an article about Biden's family's American Families Plan. What is it? It sounds like it's got to be a pro-family thing, right? Oh, the first Catholic president is pro-family. He's got the American Families Plan to help us, you know, help American families. Well, no, actually, it's purely economic, purely transactional, loveless. A lot of family advocates are coming out against it and saying all this does is undermine marriage and family and parenthood. All it does is it gives us financial incentives to leave our kids at bureaucratically run daycares and work more to increase the GDP. Isn't that funny? I mean, socialism is deceptive in that way. No, it's not caring at all. It's going to separate everyone.
No, and you and I, as friends, we talk a lot about that, about how privileged we are to have spouses that stay home, you know, children home. We get to spend so much time together, and they're ripping families apart. And then you here have, on a similar note, the Biden backs cheap foreign labor by putting an end to former President Trump's ban on temporary foreign workers. Prior to COVID, we had the lowest unemployment in history for Latinos, for Black African Americans, Black Americans. And now we have the Chamber of Commerce and the National Association of Manufacturers. They have sued to import cheap foreign labor. But the Biden administration is going to end this. How is it that they're so worried about COVID that even after you have your vaccine, they want you to wear a mask indoors, and socially distance? But yet at the border, there's no COVID precautions. They want to bring cheap labor from around the world. It just makes no sense. I mean, it makes sense if it's to destroy the American middle class. Like, if that is their goal.
Right. Well, it's destroyed the American middle class, destroy the lower classes, do whatever you want with everyone except me, a very small minority of highly educated Westerners. That's the future they have in mind. Remember the old image of the boot over a stamping on a human face for eternity. Well, as long as it's their boot, that's what they want. There's a very small minority, and that's actually endemic in the whole Biden administration. I love some comments I've been hearing from J.D. Vance, the commentator, who wrote the novel Hillbilly Elegy, or the book, rather.
Yeah, in fact, he had a great article in Newsweek that was the immigration plan I've been pushing for 20 years. Secure the border, E-Verify,
right.
Dream Act. It was almost, you know, we were on the same wavelength. Did you read that?
Yeah. Yes, yeah. I actually sent it to you.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Okay, you did send that to me. And I think you said, I think you read your plan. I think is what you said when you sent it to me.
Yeah, I said, this guy's been reading over your shoulder. So, yeah, actually, it's funny. And to your credit, what Biden just did, backing cheap foreign labor on behalf of big corporations, to your credit, that used to be a mainstream opinion of the worst elements of the GOP, who happened to really hold sway much more than they do now. I watched really over the course of about 2 years, and it was the 2 years leading up to 2016, really, you transformed the whole narrative on immigration. Because remember, it used to be, keep those ugly, dirty, sick people out of our country because we hate them. You used to hear that.
Look, I started writing on immigration in 2004. I stuck with the same same talking points, same policy position, which I stumbled across working for the Bush campaign in 2004, how broken our immigration system was. I was thought of as a left-wing kook. You know, I published something at Breitbart saying secure the border, mandatory verification system, and the Dream Act, which I believe is just, because if you admit that the system was designed to lure in vulnerable migrant labor for exploitation, if you admit that was the design, then the children shouldn't be casualties of that. So if you came here with your parents and you've been here since the third, fourth, fifth grade, I have friends who fit in this category. You're American, and you know you shouldn't suffer. Well, now, I don't know, you know, I've been beating that drum hard now for almost 20 years, and there was something happened, right, around maybe it was between 2014 and 2016, and we began to pick up steam. And then that J.D. Vance article, I was like, wow, we've really made a lot of headway. And even in the Trump administration, when they began to use these talking points, I'm thinking, okay, this is a victory. Because in 04, 08, when I worked in the presidential primaries, there was a lot of like really, I don't think they were bigoted. It was sort of rule of law. We shouldn't be exploited sort of rhetoric. But it sounded nasty and it sounded bigoted. Yeah. And I don't think most people who were advocating those policies were bigots or nativists, quote unquote nativists. But it was sort of that law and order arguments. And we agreed on most things, like we want to secure the border, but primarily the number one reason we want to secure the border is to prevent vulnerable people from being lured in here by the folks the Chamber of Commerce represents and be exploited. The number one reason you put a fence around your swimming pool isn't so kids don't pool hop. It's so a kid doesn't drown, right? Like that's the number one reason you do that. And so we are a beautiful, caring country of immigrants. The last thing we want is a policy of exploitation. So I just thank you for those kind words. It was a hard fight, and you guys helped me. Catholic Vote was one of the few places I could publish my positions on immigration 10 years ago. And then now it seems to be it's becoming almost a universal position of sane people in both parties.
Yeah, and I think it's really spread. I mean, that's one area where I see a lot of hope, certainly on the right, but even a little on the left increasingly, is what you call whole life principles, or just generally being humane in our policy points. It's spread I remember writing probably under your influence to some degree in something like 2010, you know, conservative position against the welfare state shouldn't be I don't want poor people to be given stuff. A big part of the argument against it is, I don't want poor people to be kept down and manipulated with stuff. And I don't want the stuff given to them to be of a low quality. And I don't want them to be indoctrinated against their will, et cetera. And similarly, that's the same kind of attitude of, this is inhumane, not this is costly or it'll hurt our GDP. It's cruel. That kind of rhetoric against open borders makes more sense. It's also more convincing, but I think it's more convincing for the fact that it's truer. And similarly with J.D. Vance criticizing now Biden's family plan, he says a lot of conservatives have argued for a long time against subsidies for families because it's wasteful or whatever. He said, no, the stronger argument is that a lot of these plans hurt children. They're bad for children because children get less time with their parents. We should be empowering parents to have options so that they can, for instance, have a spouse stay home and help raise the children. They should have school choice with, you know, use some subsidies to enable that, to empower people from the ground up. And again, it's basically about being humane. It's a life perspective rather than, rather than team sports where we're just fighting over money. You know what I mean? That's the socialist. That's playing the socialist on their field by their rules. If we're just fighting over money.
No, and and that's where conservatives can be kooky. I have a friend who tithes literally half his income, and he does very well. And he tithes half his income. And I remember it was about 10 years ago. He made this argument, like, you know, we don't want them just giving our money to the poor. I'm like, brother, you donate half of your money, most of it to like food and work programs. I said, why don't you say what you mean, which is you don't want the money to be misspent, to be abused on the poor. You don't want your money to be, I said, say, be accurate in what you're saying. Because he had made this, if you heard him, you'd think this is a cruel, heartless man. But the truth is, he tithes half of his money. And most of it goes to food programs and vocational programs in his county. And caring for the very people that he was up, it sounded like he didn't care about at all. And so I'm grateful.
Yeah, right.
The problem with the left is they have learned how to weaponize sort of really what is Catholic social teaching, the rhetoric of it, in a way that's brutal and heartless. Yep, and they're never there when they're never there when they're needed. Their voice is silent. You know, leading up to the war in Iraq, the invasion of Iraq, the bishops were banging the war drums. You know, the USCCB was founded to inspire Americans to go in, the Catholic Germans and Italians to support, and Irish to support World War I. And, and then they were equally silent when we withdrew, and they were crickets when genocide erupted in Iraq against our co-religionists. But yet when you hear their rhetoric, it always sounds so, so nice. But our position is the best. So what was it? You quoted us, quoting Yeats, about how you had it off the top of your mind, and I wrote it. But we need to be as bold and as brazen as those who are, I was going to call them foolish. I'm just going to say they're ignorant, or they just want to be liked. They want to belong. They want to put their back to the wind.
That's the thing, is you got to consider, though, too, that you might be under the influence of bad people. And I think a lot of people make bad decisions because otherwise Becky at the book club might look down on them. But you got to consider, maybe Becky at the book club is not a great mentor. maybe, because I pulling from J.D. Vance again, what he was saying about the American family plan, is he says, actually, this is a subsidy of the lifestyle of a small minority of elites. It's a subsidization of their lifestyle, because these are people who do care more about work, about their careers, and about money, and about their own children. They're a very bad group of people.
Biden, whereas
ordinary Americans.
Joe Biden never pressed the brakes. You know, his wife dies, And he just keeps on going, dragging his children behind him like, you know, tin cans after a wedding. And, you know, as a father, you and I have talked about this. It's just friends. We talk about this. We've had to make decisions to pump the brakes in our careers, to slow down, even to pull over, to stop, to get out of the car. You know, we have to sometimes, but you look at someone like Joe Biden, and I talk to my children about this. I say, you know, your dad, I get to be around some of the wealthiest, most powerful people in the world. Don't envy them their wealth. Don't envy them their power, because these are people who their family lives are a wreck. Their children are a wreck. Their mental and physical health is a wreck. They've never learned to pump the brakes. And so you, that's a great observation that J.D. Vance made, that they're blind. This is a place where Biden may be absolutely blind, because that is how he is. One thing you can say about him is he's a hardworking guy. He's a workaholic who's never stopped a minute in his life for humane leisure, for the beautiful things in life that we were created for.
He's full of passionate intensity.
Yeah, chasing what?
Yeah.
Chasing.
Well, I mean, that's the thing, is that chasing what? Not the common good, right? The Catholic conception of the common good, first of all, starts as locally as you can get with your own family. And then it branches out from there. I mentioned Joe Biden tries to present himself as Jimmy Stewart. You know, his most famous role probably is George Bailey. The entire story of Jimmy Stewart's George Bailey is learning the hard way that actually the area where you're of most value is Bedford Falls. Check in on your neighbor. How are they doing? What are you doing for them? That's where your sainthood will blossom. And if it doesn't there, it won't meaningfully anywhere else. So.
Yeah, no, I think his favorite movie is The Godfather. And if you were to ask The Godfather what his favorite movie is, he would tell you It's a Wonderful Life. Right? That's what he's going to say. He's not going to admit that The Godfather's his favorite movie. He can't admit that, right?
Right.
Can I tell you a funny story on that note?
Yeah.
Because these are just my chances to share publicly wild stories that I would never be able to share. Eduardo Verástegui and I literally pitched someone we had good reason to believe is a mob boss, okay? And this was in Chicago in his office. And I can't say who he is and what he did, but, you know, we heard things and we knew. But I through a friend, I was able to get us a meeting. And behind Eduardo, he couldn't see, was an oil painting of a scene from The Godfather. It was behind Eduardo. Mm. And Eduardo said, the first thing the guy gave us, I'm going to give the guy away, I can't say what it is, but the first thing, because I'm sure he shows this off to a lot of people. The first thing he showed us was in like a protective case. It was like a memorabilia of a famous mobster that he had, something that belonged to a very, very famous mobster. He had it in this little case, and he showed it to us. Well, that's very interesting. That wasn't Eduardo. Still, the light bulb didn't go off because he's such a sweet guy, right? He didn't realize what was going on here. So we pitch him the movie, and Eduardo's like, you know, this is a chance for you to invest in something beautiful and good, because he had funded some really bad movies in the past, violent and just nasty movies. And so this is a chance for you to do something very beautiful, put your family name on there, because you know you're Italian and I'm Mexican, and we together have seen how we are being misrepresented in films, like always the Italian is the mobster. And this is such a bad thing. And I'm looking at Eduardo say this as right behind him is an oil painting of a scene from The Godfather. And I'm like, Eduardo, this is the wrong sales pitch, my friend. And so I don't know. I had to fit that in there. So there we go. That's an interesting story I could fit in the middle of the podcast. To go with, yeah. I believe, Joe Biden. What was his nickname? Didn't he, the big guy? Isn't that his nickname? He calls himself the big guy?
Yeah, that's right.
The big guy has to get his cut. Is George Bailey going around saying the big guy has to get his cut? Would George Bailey ever say that?
No, he wouldn't. And not only that, but remember who says it, whose nickname. This is his own son. Doesn't even call him dad. Right? He's the big guy. He's my boss. we are together a criminal enterprise whose aim is to gain more power and more money. We're not even a family. How sad is that? So, yeah.
No, that's why my heart breaks for Hunter Biden. I have no ill will to that guy. I think he's just, he's lived a very sad, dissolute life. He struggles with mental illness and addiction. And if I was Joe Biden's son, would I be any different?
No.
Nah.
No, I mean, that's the thing. At some point you have to just, I mean, that it's funny you say that, because actually I look at Biden and I get deeply sad. For some reason, like, I remember getting angry at Barack Obama. I don't get angry at Biden. I look at him and I get sad. Which, by the way, coworkers of mine who were defending the Little Sisters of the Poor, as you know, Joe Biden chased them through the courts for like 10 years to force them to fund abortion against their conscientious convictions. They're like angry at me for not being angry at Biden. But I look at him; it just saddens me.
Well, you know what it is? I'm going to tell you what it is. It's the gift of the Holy Spirit, because I used to get very violently angry at these people. And now it's just really a pity. You just really feel, and maybe it's just we're getting older. And I think when you're young, maybe you envy the people of their evil, maybe. I don't know. Or you think that there's some charm or some benefit that they're receiving that you resent. But, you know, as we get older, and maybe it's just the gift of the Holy Spirit, at least for me, and I'm very easily excitable. I'm very easy. I get angry. You know, I can get upset pretty quick.
Yeah.
And, but with folks like Biden and Obama, you know, I get mad at Bishop Barron. I get mad at Scott Hahn when I read his new book. Like, I got angry because I was disappointed. And for those, there'll be a whole series of articles I'm publishing next week with John Zmierich on that. But with someone like Biden, I just pity him. I'm going to give you another Eduardo story. He talks about how these people are chasing. Have I ever told you his analogy of the rabbit, the mechanical rabbit?
Yes, but not your audience.
I might have told him, but you know, it's just that the greyhounds chase a fake rabbit. And every once in a while, it breaks, and a dog will catch the fake rabbit. And he bites down on it, and his mouth bleeds, and he cuts himself. And he never runs again because he was chasing a lie. And Eduardo says, you know, he said, you know, I became very famous as a young man. I had the chance of biting onto this mechanical rabbit and knowing it's a lie, so I will never chase it again. He said, pity those fools. Those poor souls that are chasing a lie their entire life. And that's why I say Biden's like the Godfather. You know, they just wanted really what was best for their family. It was all they desired. Yeah. That was their authentic desire. But they were fools. They did not know how to authentically provide and care for their children, their family. They destroyed their families. And I think...
Yeah, I was just going to say, it's also, go ahead. Sorry, actually, I don't want to interrupt.
No, not that I think Biden has any love for this country. I think we're the mark, you know, but I think he does love his own family, but he just didn't know how to, he's so devoid of wisdom that he did not know how to provide or care for them. And he thinks by cutting his son into deals and letting his son leverage his name for wealth that he can spend on crack. I mean, this is what he was doing, and destroying himself.
Yeah.
This is how Joe Biden thought he was providing for his loving his family, loving his son. It's very sorrowful.
Yeah, maybe that's exactly sorrowful. Maybe that's what's so sad. You know, it reminds me of something Andrew Clavin is a screenwriter and he's a host of The Daily Wire said once. He said he really likes The Godfather. He said The Godfather shows the truth in silhouette. No, sorry, it wasn't The Godfather, it was The Sopranos, which, by the way, is one of the best series I've ever seen. I thought it was amazing. But he said it's a show that's full of just evil, right? But he says if you look carefully, it shows goodness and truth in silhouette form. So the parts that it shows, you know, if you look at all of the evil, you can see that it spells out, so to speak, a paint by the dots or the parameters of the good. And Biden might be kind of like that too. Like he is a, you could write a whole catechism around Biden, not in him. He is the void in the middle.
You need to write the Joe Biden catechism.
The Joe Biden catechism for unwitting voters.
With the introduction by Andrew Klavan.
That's beautiful. Yeah, but it's sad. And you know, I told you how much I was moved by this movie, A Hidden Life, about Blessed Franz Jaeger's daughter. Now, here's a guy who gave up everything. He did the opposite. I mean, Biden is sort of an opposite of Blessed Franz. Because here's a guy who I look at, and by the way, you look at Franz the day he dies in the movie, right before he walks into his execution. Look at him. Does that sadden you? Imagine pitying that man. What a wonderful man. I'm filled with joy thinking of him. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's a beautiful point. You're watching him, and yeah, you're in awe. It's such a beautiful movie, and you're in awe of his courage, and they gave him every opportunity to escape his death.
Yeah.
You know, even up till the very end, he could just sign this oath, just sign this to say the Hitler loyalty oath. And
he's not a very old man. So too, another thing, a lot of nice people, as we were talking about earlier, would have probably told him what talents you have, what great things you could do in this world. In fact, you could probably be a great asset to the Reich, right? And he gives it all up. It's the opposite of the Biden trajectory. But it's the Catholic one.
Yeah, well, what's interesting is people can look at that, they can watch that movie and they can celebrate the life of Franz. But if someone were to do the equivalent today, they would say you're being imprudent, you shouldn't do this. All the things that were everyone, the bishop, the priest, his friends, villagers, everything they said to him, anyone today who would stand up to the spirit of the age would be told the same things that Franz was said. What's interesting is we can look back and admire somebody from standing up against the spirit of another age. But René Girard talks about almost the invincibility of the spirit of the age at that moment. And we live in a society that was founded on three stories of impiety. Troy, the sack of Troy, Socrates drinking the hemlock, and Jesus Christ being nailed to a cross. Troy was sacked for impiety. Socrates drank the hemlock for impiety. And Jesus Christ was nailed to the cross for impiety. So we're in a civilization that its flesh and its bones, its blood and its spirit are the celebration of the impious. Yet, even in our civilization, it is so hard for people to deny the spirit of their age, to not deny the gods of their city. And Joe Biden is somebody who's... I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that's so beautiful. I think that I hope a lot of listeners lights a light bulb above their heads. That thing that's been bothering you, that stuffy, oppressive atmosphere around you that's enforced even by people you would least suspect of misleading you, is piety for a religion that you question. And it's okay that you feel impious. That's probably a healthy impulse, and I think you should pursue it. Yeah,
it's a great impulse, isn't it? That to deny the spirit of the age is to actually honor truth. You know, it's to be pious in an authentic way, to search after truth in an authentic way. And what you're denying is the false opinion of the age. That's the piety we're talking about. That I am not going to kneel to the false opinions of this age, even if they're aligned with power. I'm working on this article series where I want to talk about the four illiberal kingdoms, Anglo-fascism, the European Union, Russia, and China, and how we're seeing a crushing of religious freedom, economic and political freedom, freedom of speech, that there is nowhere in the world anyone can look to some power, to some city on a hill and say, there's my ally. And again, I don't want to get you in trouble, Catholic vote. Pope Francis, to me, his line of gesture is to side with the powerful against the weak. That's what he does. He virtue signals, he uses the right language, but at the end of the day, he's standing with the powerful against the weak every single step of the way. And so that's why you get books like, I know you haven't read Scott Hahn's new book, that it's really a pious book to the spirit of the age. It's a denial of freedom. It's a denial of religious freedom, political freedom, economic freedom, freedom of speech. And Scott even talks about in the book about how, you know, we shouldn't conform to the spirit of the age. I'm like, brother, your book is completely conforming to the spirit of the age. You talked about radical individualism being the cause of the great horrors of the 20th century. No, Nazism, communism, and fascism deny that's not radical individualism. Radical individualism caused its fair share of problems. I wouldn't even say abortion at root is the fruit of radical individualism, because in the Soviet Union, communist China, you had forced abortions. The Soviet Union and its satellite countries had the highest abortion rates in the world, and it was radical collectivists like Margaret Sanger that weaponized American radical individualism to thrust abortion into the United States, Mary Stopes into the UK. So, they always like to pretend abortion only happens here, and it's the fruit of the founding fathers. This is what the integralists will say, and it's absurd. I don't know where they're living. You know, they're not even familiar with Margaret Sanger.
I'm inclined to, it's interesting to hear you say that, because I remember hearing a lot in sort of Catholic intellectual circles about the threat of radical individualism, as if it really were the prevailing evil of our time, and just being perplexed. And I wrote about it just like a decade ago. I remember just thinking, where are these radical individualists? I work with students. Their tendency is to look around the room before they do anything. And when they graduate and go into professions, a lot of them are actually willing to deny themselves in order to serve the progressive cause. It is, in fact, the case. I was talking about this with my brother recently, that a lot of public educators, for example, don't make a huge salary, right? Bureaucrats who work for the leftist or Marxist cause in inner cities have to endure a fair amount of trouble and hardship. Some of them also are willing to cut off their own mothers and fathers and brothers and sisters, denying themselves the comforts of a healthy family life because they are taught, brainwashed, indoctrinated into thinking that all of those people are evil unless they are willing to work, you know, tirelessly on behalf of the cause. These are people, these are communalists in a sense. They are not individualist in the sense of, I'm just in it for myself and pleasure. You see?
Yeah, no, and to think that this new book comes out by Scott Hahn pushing integralism, and they talk about radical individualism being the heart of all of our problems today. No, it's the only ideology of evil we're allowed to address today because it's not a threat at all. I mean, you can't go to church. You have to wear a mask. You have to socially distance. They want you to take a vaccine. They want to give you a vaccine passport. Do we really think we live in the era of running Ayn Rand's ideology is running amok?
Yeah, I look across the scene of everyone dressed alike in matching face masks, standing on marks on the pavement put there by authority figures, telling them where to stand, where not to stand. And I watch them pretend not to notice as young mothers are put in handcuffs and dragged out of the grocery store for not complying. And I think, you know what the problem is today? Too much nonconformism. We should stop these nonconformists.
Yeah, no,
they
right.
They are a threat.
Have you seen that? There's a meme that went around that was people standing on those yellow dots in the rain. There was an awning.
Oh, yeah.
2 feet to the left, they could have still been socially distanced, just not in the rain. I mean, this is bizarre stuff. This is bizarre stuff. And yet we're constantly being told that the great threat, the great ideology of evil today is radical individualism, which I'm not, I mean, I think there's, again, the American individualism was harnessed to some degree with like trans ideology. And of course with abortion and contraception, pornography. But when you look at the great genocides and democides of the 20th century, at the root of Nazism, communism, and fascism is not radical individualism, it's illiberalism. And even at the root of the culture of death, the abortion culture, at the it was population control fanatics and Marxists like Margaret Sanger that thrust abortion onto the American people. And yes, their propagandists would, from time to time, use the language of radical individualism to sell to the American people abortion. But again, abortion transcended the Anglo-American political community. I mean, the Soviet Union had the highest abortion rate in the world.
Yeah, and you know what the other thing about radical individualism that always gets me is that for some reason, discussions of it are always purely, safely disconnected from actual actionable circumstances that we might be called to intervene in, and totally academic and abstract. And part of why that's the case, we've talked about this before, is I look at the leading proponents, in theory, of so-called radical individualism or libertarianism, and they're people like Ron Paul. Dr. Ron Paul might abstractly tell you he's an individualist, but this man is unmistakably a selfless Christian communitarian who has given his entire life for the common good. First as a doctor, then as a public witness against abuses of various communities of people. So even there, where I'm like, okay, let's say we're going to fight individualism. Who are you going to fight? Ron Paul, this kindly old gentleman, doctor, who's obviously not even an individualist in any toxic way. You know,
well they like to they like to make a boogeyman of Ayn Rand. Let's look at Ayn Rand. As a young Jewish girl, she witnessed pogroms of the integralists of her day, killing Jews. Hannah Arendt and Leo Strauss also witnessed victims of Russian pogroms that would flee to Germany and their communities would care for them. So Ayn Rand witnessed this coming from illiberal religious integralists, right? Then the Bolsheviks come and try to kill her, right? Because she's a middle-class, upper-middle-class Jew. She flees to America and bangs the drum of radical individualism. But again, you're right. At the root of it, she was a communitarian because she stood up to the KGB that had plans to kill her. She was relentless in battling against totalitarian socialism, being called a fanatic while Stalin was moving full steam ahead with his gulags, being called a fanatic when Mao was killing, his agriculture policies led to 60 million people starving to death, being called a fanatic when Mao, through the Cultural Revolution, being called a fanatic during the rise of the Khmer Rouge. And she's the one they think we should be most scared of. But all of those mainstream people that were defending Stalin, defending Mao, defending the Khmer Rouge, we're still allowed to celebrate. But Ayn Rand, who's somebody who was scandalized by religion, scandalized by socialism, that's why she called herself selfish, and she was the Milo Yiannopoulos. That's maybe not fair, but she worked hard at capturing people's attention.
She had maybe that I have, which recently I told somebody, said, "Why aren't you masking?" And I said, "I don't believe in germs." It's called germ theory for a reason.
You should do what I do. I look at them, and I do this. Embarrasses my wife. And I say in a cowboy voice, I say, because I don't wear masks. That's what I say.
Mm-hmm.
I don't wear masks.
It works.
You say it like that, that's it, brother. They will just walk away. Why aren't you wearing a mask, sir? Because I don't wear the mask. That ain't my thing. No, there's no more follow-up questions on that. I had to go today to get blood work done, and nothing is wrong, just an insurance policy thing. And I didn't wear a mask. I just walked in. I said, this is where they're going to make me put on a mask. And I will have to wear a mask, you know, because I need to get this blood work. But, you know, I just strolled in. I said, they're going to have to give me a mask because I don't even own masks anymore. Not a word.
Good for you.
Not a word. Well, I live in Texas, so I can pull that off. Not a word. And this is what I tell people. I'm not wearing a mask for me. I'm not wearing a mask for me. I'm not wearing a mask to protect your freedom. You see, if I were to wear a mask, I would be hurting you. Therefore, I don't want to hurt you and your children and your posterity. Therefore, for you, I'm not wearing a mask. And you know, it's a true statement. That is, it's easier just to go along to get along. But you know what? I'm not going along for this common good, because a mask that is designed to stop bacteria from going from a surgeon into an open wound isn't going to stop a virus going in any direction. Droplets, nonsense. I'm not wearing a mask because I care about the common good, period.
Yeah, and you know what else? The argument I've made, and it's I'm hoping it'll move some people. I simply say, look, I don't know anything about science. I'm not going to be one of these people who pretends that I've learned all about science in the last few months. And I'm not going to make any kind of erudite, careful argumentation here. I'm not wearing a mask because of how people who don't wear masks are being treated, period.
Exactly.
You cannot, I don't care if it's absolutely, it's very important that we all wear masks. I don't care if your position is correct. The fact that people do not have a right anymore to dissent against your position should absolutely shock your conscience. And even if I agreed with you that everyone should wear a mask, I would choose not to wear one because people are being abused for not wearing them. Because they are not being, they do not have a right to in any way signal that they don't agree with your position. You should be on their side even if you disagree with them. Just out of basic decency. It's Christianity 101. It's not charitable the way that people are being treated for disagreeing.
Yeah, no, it's
is that liberalism?
That is liberalism properly understood as yes. It is rooted in our Anglo-American idea of freedom. And you know, this is bizarre. I went 3 days ago. I took my children. We went for 2 days to the Kalahari Water Park in Austin. It's the nation's largest indoor water park. We went to that water park on Monday, Tuesday. This is what's great about being a homeschooler. You know, you go to things when there's not going to be a lot of people there. We went there, and do you know, there were, I'm going to cry just thinking about it, all the children there were very, very sick. You know, there were a few families there because it was Monday and Tuesday, but there were, I don't know if it was Make-A-Wish Foundation, St. Jude, but they were clearly very sick and they were there with their parents. I don't know if it was terminal, but I had to ask myself, here you have terminally or very sick children at a water park. And then I just kind of had to figure it out. How did this happen in the time of COVID? I mean, they must not have long to live, you know, and these kids probably wanted to come to the water park, like a Make-A-Wish type of thing, because they didn't have masks. And one kid was so skinny and sick, and he was shivering, and it was so hot in this place, right? He was shivering, and it was like 90 degrees and humid in this water park. And but yet he was smiling. You could see in his eyes sorrow, and you could see in his eyes joy, like together. That's the only way I could explain it. And none of us can ever know what it's like to be, I can't imagine what it's like to be a 6, 7, 8-year-old child with a terminal illness, the confusion, the questions, the wonder. You know, we'll never know that. And I was thinking of as I was watching these kids, I just got mad at the world. I was just like, are you kidding me? We have forgotten about the children at St. Jude's and Ronald McDonald House and the foster children and the sexually abused children and the single mothers with two kids in a one-bedroom apartment with no Wi-Fi. Like, literally, We have abandoned the vulnerable. Turkey's shutting water off for cities in Syria. Snipers are shooting children. 3 million Uyghurs in concentration camps. You know, we've got Africa starving because of our COVID policies. They don't even have, they didn't, you know, this is what's happening. And we're obsessing on ourselves. We're so fearful of ourselves. And that's what I thought of when I was sitting there watching these young children run around a water park, which is probably one of their last days on Earth. And I thought, we have become so decadent and so selfish that we are so panicked and worried about ourselves that we have forgotten the truly vulnerable. And this is why I'm so grateful for Catholic Vote. When you look down of your chart at catholicvote.org/Biden, you see that the Biden administration at its heart is a war against the vulnerable. And the political community should be ordered around protecting the vulnerable. So from his immigration policies to his war on religious orders, the care for the elderly, to experimenting on children that were aborted, the line of gesture of the Biden administration is an utter thoughtfulness of the vulnerable on the one hand, but in another way, a mindfulness of the of humans' desire to serve the vulnerable, because he's a victimist. Everything he does is feigning concern for the vulnerable on the one hand, and everything he does on the other hand is the absolute exploitation and or abandonment of the vulnerable. And I will go even farther to say most of his powerful supporters, most of his institutional support, and maybe I'll end with this on this question. The bishops are going to be voting soon on whether to deny Joe Biden communion. I'm sure you're aware of this.
Yes. Yep.
So do you have, what's the vote? Why are they voting on this? He should be denied communion. Do you know who called for this vote, and what do you think they're going to vote?
I don't know who called for the vote. They're going to be meeting in June, having their assembly, and they're going to have a reclarification document addressing the church's position on the reception of the Eucharist vis-a-vis your status as a sinner or a public promoter of things that are against the church. So it obviously butts up against Joe Biden and his administration, he being the only the second nominal Catholic to be in the White House since our nation's founding. And there's been a lot of noise about it, less noise from the actual bishops than from their opponents or the promoters of the current administration. They wanted to nip this in the bud as quickly as they could, because Biden gets a lot, like you said, he's a victimist. He gets a lot of play out of presenting his quote-unquote devoutness, displaying his rosary beads, presenting himself as a trustworthy, grandfatherly, mass-attending Catholic. So there's no worse outcome in terms of optics from the perspective of Biden's supporters than the governing body of the Catholic Church in America calling him out as an opponent of the church and her teachings. So they've been trying to nip it in the bud. Lots of pressure. It's a question of whether the USCCB will have the fortitude to say, yeah, let's go through with it. Let's publicly hold this guy to account on behalf of the vulnerable, I think would be the right perspective. But we won't know until June.
So how do you think they'll vote?
I think that they will make a clarifying statement that is general in nature and doesn't name the president. And that'll be that.
So so here's my prediction. There'll be no vote. There'll be a way to scuttle it. I just can't imagine in a million years that they're going to allow this vote to take place. So you think
we have an interesting thing going on, because the USCCB obviously it's been kind of a push and pull situation for a while. You have Archbishop Newman, who is the chair of the the Bishop's Committee on Pro-Life Activity. You have other bishops kind of peppered throughout the country, including Bishop Paprocki of Illinois, Springfield. What is his name in San Francisco? Or not San Francisco. Where is it in San Francisco? Cordelione. You have various bishops of positions. Actually, the day of the inauguration, January 20th, remember Bishop Gomez, the president of the USCCB, came out with a statement that had some pretty on-the-nose wording about concerns the church has over Biden's policy positions. But right away, you also had Archbishop Supich of the Diocese of Chicago come out slapping that down, right? This is the president of the USCCB, right? And you've got Bishop Supich calling on the Vatican to choke out impulses in the USCCB. So that's a real ongoing internal drama.
So if this vote takes place, will it be public? Will we know who voted how?
Oh, that's a great question. No, I don't think we would know who voted how. We can guess pretty clearly by their statements after the fact. If they came out with a strong statement against Biden, you would sure know who didn't vote for it, because they are very vocal, because they have allies in all of the most powerful centers of cultural and political influence. And they're never afraid to speak out.
Well, here's what I promise. I promise. We're going to find out. We've got to find out how people voted. And you're right. Some of the brazen ones like Supich will make public statements. And here's my commitment that I will pass on to my children and grandchildren orders to make sure that there will never be a school or any apostolate named after any of those, because that's what they care about, any of those bishops that vote to give Biden communion, because canon law is clear. What is that? Why do they even have to vote? Canon law 915 is if you, it's not that his position on abortion, it's that he publicly advocates for the intentional killing of the innocent. That is a grave scandal, right?
Yeah.
There's also a grave scandal that Bishop Barron, with all of his voice, has never speaks up for the persecuted church, let alone the Uyghur. Could you imagine when he would be on like Jordan Peterson or one of these shows, he could bring attention to the vulnerable child in the womb, or he could bring attention to the persecuted church in Africa or in the Middle East, or he could talk about the Uyghur. No, never once, right? That to me is a scandal. Of one kind, you know, the silence of the Pope in the face of these great atrocities that are happening around the world, and he's completely silent on those. And but on the other hand, we have a Catholic president who is not silent. He apologizes for the genocide in East Turkestan, calling it a cultural norm, and then he advocates for the intentional direct killing of the child in the womb in the United States, and it greatly expands it.
Right.
So why are they voting on this? Is the question I have. But it's probably a conservative bishop that's forcing the vote. And I really hope it happens.
Well, right. Now, the thing is that the bishops, the pastor, so to speak, of the president, the one whose church the president goes to on a regular basis, is totally on the president's side. So it would really be a matter of forcing that pastor to back down. Wilton Gregory of the Diocese of Washington, D.C. is the same. He is a big fan of Biden, it seems. And he's spoken very harshly. He actually spoke very harshly against President Trump just going to a church and kneeling and praying with his Catholic wife. Remember?
I do.
Wilton Gregory treated that as a scandal, right? Now, you have this person who's monstrously opposed to the church in her defense of the vulnerable going and receiving communion on a like almost weekly basis. And Wilton Gregory is appalled that anyone would suggest there's anything wrong with that. So it's sort of actually, to be frank, the situation isn't whether the church will tell Biden to stop receiving communion in keeping with the perennial teachings of the church. The question is whether one part of the church has the gall to tell the other part of the church that has infiltrated it, that they have no right to give communion to Biden. That's the question. You see what I'm saying?
Yes.
It's an internal problem. It's a civil war problem. The bishops if they can't act as one to tell members of their own hierarchy to stop it, then there's a problem.
You know, the real problem is people need to know their level, right? There's too many bishops that they knew they didn't have the courage, the fortitude, the integrity to be bishops. They knew it. And they should have refused being elevated.
Right.
They should have said, I do not have the character. I'm addled by insecurities. I am swept away by power or celebrity. I think that's so many of them. Supich, I just think, is a rebel against the church. But I think that so many of them are just, they're just simpletons who are, they're impressed with power, they're impressed with wealth. If you're impressed with power, wealth, and celebrity, you should not be a bishop, period. Because your job is to look power in the face and say you're wrong. Your job is to look worldly power in the face and go, you're wrong, what? What?
Yeah.
I mean, your real job is to make sure people are getting a good Catholic education in the sacraments. But when, you know, there's ideologies warring against the body of Christ, you need to have the ability to look these monsters in the face and go, you're wrong, what?
Yeah. That reminds me of, actually, you know, it's funny. I had a friend growing up who believed in physiognomy, you know, the medieval belief that you can tell things about people's soul and character by the way their face looks.
Well, that's cute.
And his wife was...
That's interesting. Yeah. That's quaint. That's... Okay.
But his wife, a Japanese woman, also believes that, and it extended down below the neck for her as well. And she once met Bishop Angel, previously of Boston, then of Vermont, and was scandalized by his obesity. He was massive and red-faced and panting, and she was scandalized that a bishop could look like that. And as it turns out, this was a very bad man, Bishop Angel, right? But in that case, it happened that that the two did align, right? His appearance aligned with his character. He was a person who was, his main concern was self-satisfaction, right? Probably his main, the biggest thing he might oppose would be things that would actually discomfort him and discomfort him even physically. And that's really a sad, visible metaphor for so much of the church right now.
He couldn't control his appetites, like Cardinal McCarrick, who couldn't control his appetites. But the appetites he couldn't control didn't cause you to, gain weight around the belly. You know, he looked the part, right? He was McCarrick was out of central casting.
Yeah,
for a good cardinal. But of course, he was another man that couldn't control his appetites. You know, I hate the whole thing of bishop bashing. I worked for an organization, even before I was Catholic, that engaged in a lot of bishop bashing. But the problem now isn't that I feel like the bishops are it's self-defense. Like, we're being hammered. The laity is being hammered by the bishops. And it's just sort of like self-defense.
Yeah, no, and that's what I love about my pastor, Father Rick Heilman. A lot of people are flocking to him because he's a truth teller. But he's also really big on saying, you know what, also, I'm just a parish priest. You're just lay people. Let's do stuff anyway. And particularly, he says, yeah, I mean, I love that attitude. And that's been my attitude. You know me. I've had this attitude for probably 3 years now. I'm like, I'm just not interested one way or the other. If the bishops do something good, great. But they're not like my coworkers. If anything, I might encounter them as adversaries. It might be a stumbling block. But in the meantime, I'm just going to do my thing. And that's, I think, an attitude that a lot of lay people would be wise to adopt. But yeah, no, I understand what you said about self-defense. Because there are cases where a bishop will come down and say, you don't have a right to, you know, like, what was it? Church militant got told they couldn't use the word Catholic in their name. What was it before? St. Michael's Catholic Media or something?
Yeah, so. I think that's right. Well, even I can't send my children to Catholic school in my diocese because they have to be vaccinated. So I could send them to public school and get a religious exemption. But if I want to send my children to Catholic school in the Diocese of San Antonio, I have to give my children vaccines that were derived in a way that the church teaches is unethical. From
unbelievable.
Yeah. So if I want to send my children to Catholic schools in San Antonio, I have to give them vaccines that the church teaches me were derived unethically. But if I want to send them to public school, I can get a religious exemption because the Catholic Church teaches that those vaccines were derived unethically. It's really bizarre. But then in a way, it's, you know, when you watch it, maybe we can end on this, The Hidden Life. It's nothing new. You know, I look at gender ideology as bizarre and scandalous, but it's less bizarre and scandalous than the racialist ideology that swept Europe and specifically Germany, especially Germany. You know, could you imagine how living in those days and having to, they had PhD programs where somebody with a doctor would get in front of the class and tell you how you could look at someone's ears and tell if they were inferior or superior, if they were Aryan or not. I mean, it was bizarre. I mean, imagine having to live in that, how brutal and cruel and hostile that was. I mean, so I have to remind myself when I listen to this insane gender ideology, at least up until this point, it's not as vicious, as violent, and as cruel as the race ideology of the 1930s in Germany, although it's very similar in that it's insane, that it's not grounded in anything. Yeah. It empties the human person of dignity that makes it easier to expose them to cruelty and violence. But so it's nothing new. And like you saw in The Hidden Life, his own bishop tries to talk him out of it. One of the SS officers that asked him to sign the loyalty oath was a Catholic. And you know, could you imagine that? Just how confusing that had to be for
Franz. And by the way, for me, they were the stars of the movie. Because they were you and me. The people around Franz were like almost everyone you know. It wasn't that unreasonable. You know, come on. I mean, if you don't do this, you could put a target on our whole community. Have you thought about what about your children? You know, what about your church community? You know, the priest says you don't have to do this. Have you asked the bishop? So even the bishop says don't do this. Like, this sounds totally, like, this is normal. These are normal people. And I don't know about if it's nothing new. I think it, in its intensity and in its universality, it is new and it's worse. A friend of mine and I recently had this conversation where I said, it's no longer an analogy. What would I do during the rise of Nazism? You're doing it right now because we are seeing the gathering clouds that will lead to the next major human catastrophe of authoritarianism. And you are either complying or standing against it. And he said, no, it isn't. It isn't the same, though, because now the Nazis only took charge of Germany and parts of Austria and some other places. The new ideologies of what you would call subhumanism have taken over the entire world.
Yeah,
there is no America.
It's new in that data. It's new in that it's a global homogenized state, and that is the horrifying thing. You can't sit in Auschwitz and dream of Brooklyn.
Yeah.
There is no Brooklyn. You know, there's no place that you can, hey, I'm going to flee from all of this neoliberal insanity. Where in the world can I go? Yeah, that is, but yeah. I think that how we experience it in our personal level is, I think it's probably nothing new. You know, you're always going to have those prudential, I said to my wife, she won't watch the film. She's like, I know why you want me to watch the film because I'm trying to make this movie in Yemen that she refuses to let me go to Yemen. And she said, I know why you want me to watch this film. I'm not going to watch this film. So I'm okay with you dying. And I'm like, no, that's not why I want you to watch the film. It's a beautiful film. I love Terrence Malick. She's like, she refuses to watch it. But I walked her through it. And at one point, if you remember, I think you just watched it. They said, you don't even have to go in the military because we need farmers. Just say the loyalty oath. You can stay here with your wife and kids and go on happily ever after. And he said, I will actually serve in the Austrian army. I don't know if this is in his letters that I read or the movie, because I haven't seen the movie in a couple of months. Correct me. But he said, it's not that I'm willing. I will serve in the Austrian army. I will never say a loyalty oath to Hitler.
Right.
So at one point they're like, just say the loyalty oath in this office and go back to your farm. That's in the movie, right?
Yep. Yeah. And they say, one person has a great piece of advice. He says, say the loyalty oath with your mouth and think anything you like in your heart.
That was his bishop. Wasn't it?
Wow.
I think it was the bishop that said that. It was the bishop that said that. My favorite part of the film, which I think was Terrence Malick communicating, and maybe, you know, we can wrap up on this. I think I said that twice already. But do you remember when he was watching the artist touch up the icons in the statues in the church?
Yeah.
Do you remember what the artist said to Franz?
Yeah, I think so. So the artist, I remember correctly. It was a real head scratcher, but it was something to the effect of, he says, "I paint the saint, I paint the suffering Christ, but I paint him in a way that's digestible, that people can admire." And someday, sorry, you remember?
No, that was it. Go on, go get to the someday.
He said, someday I'll paint the real Christ.
Yeah, no, yeah. He said, I paint these works of art to inspire people to be saints, but actually I just make admirers of the saints. Someday I hope to do a work of art that actually inspires people to be saints. Well, of course, he's telling this to Franz. What is that work of art that inspires people to be saints? Martyrdom. Authentic martyrdom. Yeah. The artist is confessing, I believe Terrence Malick was confessing, that he would hope that one day have the courage to be a martyr himself, because he is a very faithful Christian and the best director in Hollywood alive. Mm-hmm. And a daily communicant, from what I understand, in the Anglican Church. But I just love that, right? Like, that's what we all want to do. We want to inspire other people to be saints. And the only way to do that, I think, is to truly serve the vulnerable. Why don't you wrap up for us with what's going on with Catholic Vote? And then I got to sell some pillows and some shoes with the code Jones. Have you purchased any MyPillow products yet?
Yes, sir.
No,
yes,
no. Tell the truth. Tell the truth. Do you own any MyPillow products?
I have not yet bought MyPillow.
First of all, you need to start with the pillows. You need to go to MyPillow.com, hit on the radio listener square, use the code Jones, and get the pillows. You need the mattress topper, okay? You must get the mattress. You should just get everything. Get the dream sheets, the mattress topper, and here's what everyone needs, Stephen, including you. You need the pillows. You need the sheets. You need the mattress topper. You don't need the robe. The robe's awesome. They sent me the robe. I'm not a robe guy. I'm not wearing a robe. It's just not going to happen. And I love the slippers, but I don't think people need the slippers. But I feel every home needs the mattress topper, the pillows, and the sheets. So when you go, you got to use the code Jones. So I've got to sell pillows. I think I just sold the pillows and wrap it up. And then I'm driving to see Cardinal Pell in Dallas today at the Catholic Family Conference.
All the cardinals, you pick the one that went to jail.
My favorite cardinal. Yes, he's the only cardinal I would drive 3.5 hours to go see, because that man was persecuted for having courage to go after the vermin, the worst types of people, and they went after him in the most horrible way, and he came out on top. So I'm going to go see the great Cardinal Pell. But tell us about Catholic Vote. Give us the pitch, because I'm a big Catholic Vote fan. And the CatholicVote.org / Biden is not only the best place, it's not just for Catholics. For those of you who are concerned about issues of human rights and human dignity, that's what Catholic Vote really is focused on. And, of course, it touches on religious and economic and political freedom as well, but also on how our foreign policy touches vulnerable communities around the world. It's all there at CatholicVote.org /Biden. Anything else big that you got going on you want to tell people about?
Yeah, that's perfect. Yeah, no, and thanks for the pitch. It's a very good tool. You can send this link to anyone. I think that a lot of your listeners probably know people on both sides of the political spectrum. And I'll bet you that the majority of the people you know who are smart and who you like a lot are leery of this presidency, whether or not they are conservative or liberal or far left or whatever. And this resource at CatholicVote.org is going to help them to substantiate that impulse and share it with others. So do check it out. Thank you very much.
All right, Stephen. I look forward to having you back on. I want to have you on more often.
Sounds great. I look forward to it.
All right, brother. God bless. All right, guys, we went way off topic from Biden's 100 days. I'm a big fan of Stephen, and I'm a big fan of Catholic Vote. I do hope you go to CatholicVote.org /Biden and check out. I think it's the best tool to see what's happened. Biden has had a very busy 100 days of keeping promises to the most radical elements in our society, undermining our common good, exposing the vulnerable to violence. And unfortunately, he's just beginning. So I'm excited to hear that they're going to update this thing daily. And so I'm going to actually bookmark it. So it's something I check every day. Well, I'm heading to go see the great Cardinal Pell and other wonderful Catholic speakers at this Catholic Family Conference in Dallas, or Irvine, I believe. So I just want to thank you for listening to the show. Give us 5 stars if you like the show. If you hate the show, give us 4 stars. Write a nice little comment for us. This helps the show grow. Share it with your family and friends who you think will like it. Also, again, just seeing that $2 donation to the Vulnerable People Project from Syria meant the world to me. Become a $2 a month donor. Go to thegreatcampaign.org. Let's honor that guy in Syria. And I'm actually going to be communicating with him as soon as I get off the show because he has information on Turkey's assault on Syria. And I want to make sure we get some of this information out to the world. But go to thegreatcampaign.org, become a monthly donor, match this guy at $2 a month. This episode's also been brought to you by Movie to Movement, promoting a culture of life, love, and beauty through the power of film. We may be having a deal with Fox. With Fox Nation. So my new movie looks like it's going to be going up on Fox Nation soon. I'll let you know how that goes. We're in negotiation with that. Also, this episode is being brought to you by MyPillow. I already sold you pillows twice. I will not sell you pillows for a third time, but I will say this, that you got to get the MyPillow for 2 reasons. One, it is the best pillow in the world, and that's necessary condition. But you're thinking, I don't need a new pillow, because that's how I am. I don't need anything. I'm happy with whatever I have. I don't need the best. But Mike Lindell has been a warrior supporting all of the causes that are dear to my heart, and he's being canceled by cancel culture. So to me, you know, there's boycotts and there's boycotts. So let's do a MyPillow boycott. Go to the Radio Listener Square. Click on the link, use the code Jones, get the slippers, get the sheets, 40% off the slippers for limited time only. All right, until next time, it's the Jason Jones Show. Aloha.
This has been the Jason Jones Show, powered by Mudhouse Media.